At that time, there were three Farm Bureau centers.
And what is that time?
That would be about 1950. Well, I mean, I think Farm Bureau was organized in this valley in 38, 39, or 40. And somebody could be very precise on that. But it was around 1940. I think Max Hoke, that Hoke Hall is named after, was instrumental from Pendleton, was instrumental in getting it going here. However, he never lived here. But there were three centers, one in Island City, one in Cove, and one in North Powder. And Farm Bureau basically, to all intents and purposes, took over what the Granges had been first and foremost in for 100 years before that. Farm Bureau basically is a young farm organization. By young, I mean 60 years or maybe 70 years now. But there were three centers. They met monthly, and they had a potluck dinner.
And what had the Granges been doing that was no longer being done and made it necessary for a Farm Bureau?
I really can't tell you. I can tell you what I surmise. The Granges were mostly old-line families that were getting on in years and didn't want to fight the battle, fight the fights. The farmers be mouthpiece for the... They won't like to do it, but they were winding down. Granges, you can see them all over the Northwest, at least. Half the halls are rotting into the ground.
I thought their purposes were primarily social.
They probably were, but they were a pretty... I think they probably were more social.
Was it also a way for farmers to organize on whatever problems they faced so that they could have an organized voice?
Well, I think the Granges were initially, and then to a lesser extent, perhaps still are, but Farm Bureau, I think, was more of a lobbying voice of agriculture, and
within both the county and the state.
Oh yes, oh yeah. Uh-huh. There'd be others that would know much better than I would.
When you were involved, what were some of the problems that the Bureau was lobbying about?
Well, farmers, and you kind of hit on this the other day, and wife did a much better job answering than I did, and I thought about my poor answer, which was almost non-existent. Farmers are fiercely independent. Fiercely independent. That's basically why most farmers are Republican. When I was younger, and of course, I'm winding down. I don't have the firebrand attitude that I had then, and I can see some of the fallacies of maybe being a little too much of a firebrand. But at that time, labor unions were at their zenith. And the AFL-CIO, John L. Lewis, basically the farmers felt that the difference between what they got, a farmer is the only occupation that goes hat in hand and says, what will you give me for my product? Nobody else does that. I'm oversimplifying, but basically that's what farm. What will you give me for my pigs? What will you give me for my wheat? What will you give me for my cow? Nobody else does that. And farmers started organizing. I don't think they thought the Grange was probably pushy enough. And they became more farmers became more strident. And they started organizing into commodity groups to a degree and lobbying at the legislature. And they were quite a powerful lobby, and I think still pretty much are.
Explain to me, if you would, how their lobbying might result in higher prices for their goods, their products.
Very weak answer.
Was that the aim?
Well, yes. They felt that the middleman, i.e., railroads, railroaders, charged too much, freighting barges down the Columbia way too much, and labor union men would strike, or they'd shut down the railroad, and by golly, nothing moved. They'd shut down the barges, they'd shut down at the docks. This happened in your more powerful unions, and truckers later on, with Hoffa and predecessors of Hoffa, Jimmy Hoffa. Can't quite recall their names now, but farmers basically got between what the retailer had to pay and what the consumer was willing to pay, and the farmer got what was left out of the hat. And Farm Bureau, I think, started. And I wasn't big in this as far as the end result, what they were trying to accomplish, but they were trying to keep freight rates down. Meat packers.
They also would fight against tax. Can't think of the right.
Property tax loads.
Well, and you know, they wanted to make. I can't think of what I'm trying to say.
Fair and equitable.
I can see how
taxing those tax agency tax
assessments.
You know, when they were trying to make a port here in LaGrande.
Port Authority District.
Yeah.
Port Authority.
Tax districts they fought against.
Yes, PUD they fought against.
Sorry, I took a.
You can cut this any way you want to. Farmers paid huge amounts of property taxes. Farmers generally paid little or no income taxes. Education, schools, school districts, basically until Measure, what was that measure that went through in 1980? Well, the ceiling, 1.5% property tax limitation. I can't think of the measure it was called. Farmers, well, I'm repeating myself, paid large amounts of property taxes. They paid little or no income taxes. Oregon is a weird state in the fact if they go to two-legged milking stool, they don't have a sales tax. And without that sales tax, you don't have the third leg on the stool. Milk stools generally are three legs, not four.
For good reasons.
I don't know whether you. I don't know whether.
Yes,
you know
I'm
that.
Aware of that.
Okay, I didn't know what you knew about a milking stool. But and farmers basically were getting. I'm being prejudiced now, but it was a fact of life. Farmers were basically getting squeezed because they were a minority. You've got maybe 300 farmers in the valley, and you've got city people who pay taxes, property taxes on a house, and they may pay through the nose on that house, but that's all they're paying on. And first of all, farmers had until that finally was basically through the rural vote of legislators and through lobbying to the Farm Bureau, they paid on their cattle, they paid on their machinery, as well as their land. And you paid many thousands of dollars. And basically, that's why farmers either. The only way you can go into farming, basically, now, is to marry it or to inherit it. I can become a doctor. I mean, I don't have the brains, but I can become a lawyer if you had the wherewithal up here to do it. It can take 8 years of school or six or whatever. But there's no way, basically, that you can ever get into farming unless you marry it or inherit it. I mentioned the other day I probably wouldn't have been a farmer if I'd had siblings, simply because the farm wasn't big enough, and I had other thoughts too. But farming is, you know, yourself, originally it was, I don't know what percentage, but it dropped down to 10 or 12%, and then 8 and 6 and 4, and I think probably 2% of America is, or less, is engaged in farming. And some of those are weekend farmers, or toy, what do you call them, I'm not saying the right word here, and they might raise...
Hobby farmers.
Hobby farmers, thank you, hobby farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know yourself, well, maybe you don't know, but I believe you can get a... now they're Farm Bureau helped lobby, and some of this has gone too far, but the neighbor right here next to us who works at, or any neighbor who works at a mill, could raise enough rabbits to be declared a farmer just by having a few rabbit hutches out next to the side of the house. I don't know if it's $500 or if it's $1,500, but it's a very low amount. You know, he could raise 3 or 4 cows and sell them, and a couple of cows, and really be classified, according to the census, as a farmer, a legitimate farmer, as much a farmer as I am, and yet in no way does he make a living, or whoever makes a living farming. That all changed with the 1.5% cap on property taxes, and Oregon's feeling the pains, and increasingly so. And then, of course, they put, what was that last measure? I should be more up on it. But when I went on the school board in 1976, I ran against Bernice's cousin, who was the incumbent, and it was a 4-way race, and I won with about 29% of the vote. I think Sheldon got about 28%, and the other two candidates, one of which was Dick McDaniel's sister, got maybe 20%, and the fourth weak candidate. But basically, I was supported by the farm community because of they knew my conservatism and the fact that you're going to go in there and you're going to kill snakes. Well, you're one of 7 directors. And in about 6 months' time, you go from being a Pied Piper to public enemy number one because you can't do what you promised to accomplish.
What were some of the snakes you thought you needed to kill?
Well, keeping monies down.
Mm.
Property taxes, I can only talk about the Grand District. Originally, Oregon law was written, and I do not know how it stood this long, but when districts consolidated, the property tax valuation,
assessed value?
There's another word. I know it. That's good enough. Assessed value of the district that's being swallowed up did not transfer over into the larger district.
Mm.
I don't know whether you know that or not.
No, I didn't.
But Lone Star, when it consolidated with Iowa, it was the valuation of Iowa district, and the property taxes that kept Iowa going for a few more years was basically the limit was from Iowa. And then when Iowa went into Island City, Island City was the larger, and then Island City consolidated or merged into LeGrand. What am I trying to say that word? I guess I'm mad at myself. But anyway, millage is what I'm trying to say. LeGrand had an antiquated tax base based on 1916 property taxes when LeGrand had 1,100 students. And that, of course, did not include Fruitdale, did not include Starkey, it didn't include any of the valley, didn't include Island City, Lad Canyon, any schools. I think there were 11 or 12. There was Liberty, Valeria, Lone Star, Moss Chapel, Iowa, Hillgard, Howard, Meadows, Starkey, did I say Mount Glen?
Perry,
yeah. All consolidated. They were forced to, basically, because they weren't having enough students in the late 1940s, early 1950s, but the base remained the same, and people, property taxpayers, to add more dollars to the general fund budget had to vote above, it automatically rose 6% per year, automatically, by law, rose 6%. But as you went into the 60s and 70s and 80s, you know what inflation was doing. And inflationary costs, many of those years, was considerably higher than that. On top of that, you had many other things, such as extracurricular activities, all your sports, and then finally girls' sports. When I started on the LeGrand School Board, girls did not have competitive sports. That started in about 1977 or 78. Now, I know they played intramural sports, but they were not, they didn't have coaches. They didn't go to state in basketball, in volleyball, in track, in golf, in cross country. Certainly didn't have swim teams for boys or girls, and they didn't have half the sports. They had football, basketball, baseball, and track. That was it for boys. And as people wanted these extracurricular things, you've got to pay for them. And then you also you need to have your farm system coming up. You don't pick up a piccolo and you get to be a freshman. You start picking it up in the fifth grade or sixth grade, a violin. It's true in everything. LeGrand has mock trial teams now, but much of that came into being about the time I went on the board, and I had to wear several hats because I think, as any intelligent, hopefully intelligent person knows, these things need to be funded, and yet they were being funded basically to an unfair extent by property taxes from agriculture. And the first couple of elections, I got along pretty good, and make no mistake about it, I can talk out of both sides of my mouth, and I can certainly see where you can become a politician. I was at the Mickey Mouse level. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying but I can remember going to state conventions, and I can remember, you know, I talked to bib overall Joe Farmer different than I talked to you, or different than I talked to the druggist or the anybody. And I think I was as conservative as I could be. But I don't know exactly where I'm going with this. As time started to tighten up, I would say basically it was through Ronald Reagan administration, and with good reason. Money wasn't as free, and it became more difficult to keep teacher's salary up. When I started in the school board, teachers made less than $10,000. They made $9,000 something in 76 at the bachelor's. And teachers immediately disliked me. I had a terrible time with teachers. I have a daughter that's a teacher now, but because they felt that, well, this is when other people are getting $20,000, teachers are making $9,000. My argument was, teachers had a system in LeGrand District through contract negotiations where you got to the top of the scale in 9 years, in 9 steps. Almost every other district in the state of Oregon was 15. So LeGrand's teachers, even though they weren't, were only average paid teachers, and of course LeGrand's teachers love to compare themselves with Beaverton, Park Rose, Eugene, Salem, Medford, Willamette Valley in particular. And this wasn't unique. LeGrand, Baker, Pendleton had the same problem. All of Eastern Oregon had the same problem. But I would tell the teachers, rightly, correctly, that hey, you've been, and of course, then you also can go over for your master's, and you have your CPI, Portland Consumer Price Index. They were getting that, but they were getting whatever the contract. But they got to the top in 9 years, and so for 6 years they were gliding at the top, where the others are still striving to get up there. And if you had a teacher who was going 25 years and they didn't move across to get a master's or a bachelor's plus 15 or a bachelor's plus 30 credits, yes, they were not going to be average in the money that they got. But I think LeGrand's teachers did quite well, but you had to be very careful in how you dealt with that subject. And eventually, I was beaten. I ran successfully 3 terms. I won in the 4-way race, as I said, and then the second time I ran against the ESD superintendent, and I clobbered him, mainly because people felt ESD, they called it IED in that day, they felt they didn't like professional educators on board. And he and I never did speak to each other again. He's now living down around the coast. The third time I ran unopposed, and the fourth time I ran against, the doctor ran against me, and he basically beat me because LeGrand was having to clamp down hard with the monies, and teachers, educators, salaries are 80% of the total general fund budget, and we were going to have to cut sports, and or do something else. And living out here, I fought for the bus routes because I said, hey, farmers are paying more than their share of taxes. And he fought for athletics, and that was a better argument than what I could afford out here. And
every year at tax, at budget time, it was just a battle.
It was
almost like an armed camp.
Yes, it was. We would submit 4 and 5 and 6 levies. You had to fine pencil for 11 and a half out of 12 months. Many times we ran with a budget, without a budget, and would not get, of course, see, you've got some state monies coming in, as you know. And I used to know quite a bit about it, but I haven't been on since 88, so it's been 15 years, and I can't really talk with much authority on that. But every year we would go, or not every year, but the majority of the years, of the 12 years that I was on the board, you would go into March and April of a July to June 30th budget without a formal budget. And you'd pare and you would cut, and I mean, it wasn't only sports, it was music, because that's extracurricular, and I had 2 daughters that were outstanding in public speaking. Well, public speaking is a low totem pole item. My daughters made state, both of them, and they would compete against kids that had been in 10 or 20 tournaments. And the only tournament they'd been in was winning the district championship. And they did very, very well.
We funded all their trips,
and
because there wasn't money for them.
I remember one year that my daughter Vicki, the one that wrote this, in the tournament at Ashland, her speech coach had to take personal leave days, to be able to accompany her to Ashland, where the state tournament was. And, I mean, you got to have dedication on the part of your teachers. It's extracurricular. You're a teacher, you know. And I know she, and we were down there with her, and talked to some of the kids she competed against, and she beat almost all of them. But I remember one boy in particular had been to 22 tournaments from Forest Grove. And I mean, it's like putting the Imbler Panthers against the Portland Trailblazers basketball team. if you know what I'm saying. Of course, they might beat them the way the Trailblazers. I'm not a Trailblazer fan.
When you said that many of the small one-room schools had to close because the number of students was decreasing, what was going on there? Why were those population shifts, or were there fewer children being born?
Obviously, when the pioneers came across, every child raised was it was a hired hand.
Mm-hmm.
And Lee Johnson, if you're familiar with that name, used to mention he got one of his degrees back at Iowa, and he says you'll see the gravestone of the old farmer and four or five wives and 15 children, all in the family plot. Well, the real wife was a broodmare, basically, and of course, they died usually from any child-bearing complication, uremic poisoning being one of the biggest ones. And they raised kids basically to work on the farm. You worked on the farm. And of course, as we came into an industrial revolution, the 20th century, that was needed less and less and less. And then, of course, War II, I'm sure, was a catalyst for the last of, farm boys found, hey, I can make more working at the shipyard or the docks than I can out in Dad's farm slopping pigs.
From your experience...
Dad's less kids.
From your experience on the Grand School Board and the various kinds of problems that that fairly large district had, is it your sense that perhaps at least through elementary levels, quality of education, quality of teaching, quality of learning might have been better if these small schools had remained?
Certainly to a degree, yes. I'm sure to a degree, no. Kids today know so many more things, technical things, that we did not know. And for heaven's sake, don't print this. No, I'm being cute. I don't want you to print it anyway.
You'll see what gets printed, and anything you don't want there, we can take out.
Our granddaughter is a senior in high school. She's a lovely girl. She's a fine girl. She had a boyfriend that was 2-3 years older that is in the Guards and was going to be, he thought, called up to the war that was coming. This has been about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And he was going through basic training in Fort Knox, Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And she came out here to, I had this surgery, and she came out to see Grandpa. And she has her own car, as all kids do. Forget the prejudice. But had a wonderful 2.5-hour visit. She was very alarmed that he was going to get called into harm's way. And we said, she didn't quite know where he was going. She thought the country started with a K. And I said, would it be Kuwait or Korea? Well, she didn't know. She couldn't even find the right continent. And when I've got a globe right over there, big globe. I brought it over, and was right about where you are. When I pointed out Kuwait at the southern tip of Iraq, she said, that isn't any bigger than Le Grand. Well, obviously it is, and of course on a world map, the globe doesn't look any bigger. She didn't have a clue. Didn't even have the continent. Didn't know whether it's Korea or Kuwait. She's a good girl. She's kind of an airhead, but she's a good girl. I don't know what to say. I'm going all around the question. Teachers have to be nurse and nanny, and they don't dare touch a child. They've got to see that they get on the bus. My daughter, when she lived here, would come home with different war stories every night. And today's when we were in school, if mom and daddy weren't together, weren't married, it was highly unusual. And you kind of pointed to that kid, you know, he didn't have a dad. Now, there's Uncle Joe and Uncle Jim and Uncle Harry, and between Easter and Thanksgiving, Uncle Joe might be gone out of the picture, and Uncle Jim is in, and by Christmas time, maybe they've split the sheets.
Well, obviously, country schools like Iowa and these smaller schools could not hire music teachers, art teachers.
Had to be a multi...
computer...
Well, they didn't have computers.
Well, no, but I mean, if you still had country schools, they just wouldn't be able to hire the personnel to teach.
I get awfully far afield, and I apologize. I did the service of a lady that was a teacher, the funeral service of a lady that was a teacher that died about 3 years ago. And a female could not continue teaching unless she was married. If she were married. I've got that backwards. And she had to quit teaching when she became married. She lived up on Pumpkin Ridge, and she taught at either Dry Creek or Pumpkin Ridge. And she taught over at Ladd Canyon, and Ladd Canyon had a school. And when she married Hugh Coffin, her husband, she had to quit teaching. I think teachers had a modicum of knowledge about so many more things than teachers of today have. They probably were not specialists in any subject, but they were well grounded. They had roots, they had knowledge, they had common sense.
Do you know why that rule held for so long, that a female teacher couldn't continue teaching if she were married?
I haven't a clue.
What's your guess?
Well, my guess is probably, to a degree, religion, maybe. Many times the old maid school teacher lived with a family that was...
Yes.
Director in the school board, or clerk of the school district. I know Mrs. Coffin did. That's how she met her future husband.
Could it be that the widespread assumption was that a married woman had a full-time job just being married?
Probably.
She didn't have time to teach?
Probably.
You didn't have child care and all that type of thing. Unless maybe she had her mother living with her, or her mother-in-law, to take care of the baby while she worked, but that was really highly unusual.
There was no law to that effect, as I recall.
I honestly...
Simply a widely held mm-hmm. assumption?
They just weren't hired.
Yeah. Did you know anything about how school boards of these one-room schools operated?
Well, I can remember sitting in the Studebaker car when Dad and the other two directors, and Dad was a director and Mother was a clerk, and there was three directors, and they'd get together once or twice a year, and how many cords of wood do you think Iowa's going to need, and does a pitcher pump need a little oiling, or need a few shingles on the outhouse?
Yeah. And they didn't fool with the curriculum.
Oh, heavens, I don't know. Good grief. I can't imagine, no. No, they didn't.
Well,
I was only 4 years old, but I didn't fool the curriculum.
Well, did they make a budget, or was it all work around the school?
No, I think so.
I think they must have had something to do with the budget, figuring out how much they would pay the teacher and how much they could have for supplies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bernice, you must have been involved in some organizations in your earlier life, church, social organizations.
Well, I also was involved in Farm Bureau. I was secretary at Farm Bureau for a number of years, However, we never got to the point of being state in the state
echelons.
Yeah, just local.
If you were secretary, you must remember then a few of the questions that had come up for discussion or for action.
Basically, just what we've been talking about already. I think one of the biggest fights that I remember that Gary touched very little on was the Port Authority fight. But then I also belong to a social sorority that was just women my age, married women with children. And very few of them worked at that time. We were all homemakers. And
what would you do at a typical meeting?
Oh, we'd have our business meeting.
What kind of business?
We did philanthropic work in the Grand.
Helping out families that needed assistance.
And so we had projects that we had to make money for to donate. We did the fair parade every year, and they still do it. I'm no longer a member, but they still do the fair parade, and that was one of the biggest money makers that we had, because we were paid to put that fair parade together. And
you organized the parade.
Yes.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant getting a float to participate in it.
And then when my girls got in junior high, I started working part-time outside of the home. And I worked in a fabric store, and I sold sewing machines and later spas.
Clutzens.
Mm-hmm. And I worked there until I was 65 and quit. And then since then, I've become more active in the church.
Uh-huh.
But basically, well, I was involved with my kids in their in school, PTA, and when they got old enough to go on trips with their organizations, I always took them.
She's very active in the church. She's chairman of the elders.
This is the First Christian Church.
Right? Yes.
Up until 15 years ago, you didn't have female elders.
Mm.
You didn't have female deacons or deaconesses.
Mm-hmm.
She sings in the church choir. She has a solo coming up next week in Sister Act. She sings in Sister Act. She sings in Praise Team.
We've sung in our church choir since before we were married.
Like 48 years.
And I took a few years off when my kids first started school because they had to be in bed by 8. And choir went past that time. So I took a few years off. And then when they were old enough that I could leave them here, you know, for a little while alone. And then as they got older, they started singing too.
Can you tell me a little more about the nature of that church? Not necessarily the beliefs, but the nature of the congregation and any positions that they take or concerns they have about the community?
They're a member of the World Council of Churches.
Once again, it's just been recently, other than the choir and the music part of it, that I've become, you know, really more involved. I belong to the women's group, and we donate to church wool services. In fact, our little women's group gave $2,500 to that group. We do, we give money to Northwest Medical Teams, Red Cross, and we gave $500 just recently for the Habitat for Humanity.
Aside from the recent rise in women in leadership positions, how has the church changed over the last 40 or 50 years?
In our particular congregation, we're finding fewer and fewer younger families. In fact, we probably have maybe what you would call a dying church right now. We're trying to work on it, but the majority of our congregation is probably between the ages of, what would you say, 45?
45 and 65.
Do you think this is true of other Protestant churches or Catholic Church in Iran?
I think it's true of a number of them. I think the more conservative churches right now are getting more of the younger people mm-hmm. that are going to church. And I don't know if that's because they were raised in conservative homes or if that's just more appealing to them. The church service has changed from being going in quietly, sitting down in the pew, and maybe reading your Bible or praying before the service started, meditating. Now you have praise singing or
contemporary
music. A lot more active, and
you think that's been done to try to bring in more young people?
It has, mm-hmm. yes.
But it hasn't worked.
Not to the degree that we hoped it would. Mm-hmm. It has in some churches. Mm-hmm. And
yes, it has in some churches.
Mm-hmm. How have the sermons changed in their content over these years?
They're not nearly as what I would call, they're still Bible-based, but it's not like you're just preaching from the Bible. They're taking a scripture and relating it more to our times.
Wasn't that done in the past?
Yes, but not to the degree that it is now. Our minister is very, I guess this is an old-fashioned word, hip. And he's not what you would call a great orator.
There are very few orators left anywhere.
More and more, I think that it's in some ways it's a problem because a lot of the older folks, and I don't count myself as being one of them, like the new service.
They like a traditional service.
I like the new service. I think it offers more to more people.
They like a service where you go in and you sing the old Rugged Cross and you sing Amazing Grace, but you certainly wouldn't sing anything with a guitar or with castanets. Stacy has the castanets. And Sister Act is a very upbeat, very contemporary, very modern.
Have you seen the movie Sister Act?
No.
Well, we took off from that. And
tell me if you could about relationships among the various churches in Union County, especially in earlier years. Was there much communication? Did
yes.
they each tend to be isolated from the others?
I think the churches have pretty good relationships. We just saw a movie of the building of our church, which took part in the 50s.
1950
and
55.
There in the movie was the dedication of the new building, and I would say almost all the ministers in LeGrand, excluding Mormons and Catholics maybe, at that time, spoke at that dedication.
You bring up the subject of Mormons. What has been your perception of the Mormon community in relation to other groups in Union County over your period of living here?
My mother was the only member of her family that was not Mormon. They all became Mormon. Mm-hmm. And so we were never Mormon, but my aunts and cousins were. I would say that they're more clannish. among themselves. I think they have a very large Mormon population in this area. Mm-hmm. And we went to school with a number of Mormon kids and liked them, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think they're not as outgoing in community work, and I would say that a lot of their money goes back into their own mm-hmm. church and to their own buildings.
They take care of their own. Mm-hmm. Would you like a glass of cider?
Sure.
And I think that even people in our church in this day do not really understand Mormons or their religion. There's a lot of people who do not think that they are Christian, but they do believe in Jesus Christ, you know. So that's about the only way I can answer that. I don't think there's any open discrimination against them.
Has there been in the past?
Here?
Yes.
Not to my knowledge. Oh, I'm sure there are people who don't like them and don't have anything to do with them. But no thanks. But I wouldn't say there's been any open opposition mm-hmm. against them. And I don't. However, I think in the early times in Le Grand, probably Catholics were as discriminated against as more, maybe more. I don't know.
How would you have knowledge of any of those things? Was there much word of mouth on subjects like this, or call it gossip? How else would you know about how people felt toward each other, especially related to religion?
Just hearing people talk. Uh-huh.
So from that, of course, it's always hard to make generalizations.
Well, and of course, I know that throughout the U.S. from reading, there was a lot of discrimination.
Yes.
And so I'm assuming that even though it wasn't open here, that it probably existed.
How much awareness have both of you had of black people living in Union County, or especially Le Grand?
When we were in high school, I think we had, three or four black kids in our school. And so it was never a problem.
What were you picking up about how people felt about people with black skin?
You know, I never felt that kids were mean to them, but I would say probably they were shunned, maybe not on purpose, but they were just different, you know.
A different social group.
Now, my mother always said to us when we were growing up that we were never supposed to be mean to anybody who was, you know, or not be nice to anybody who was of a different race than we were. Now, my stepfather was...
Oh, he was so prejudiced.
Was not that way at all.
And
so I sort of know both sides of this. Mm-hmm. One of the boys that was in our class happened to belong to a Methodist youth group that I went to at that time. And I never ever noticed that anybody treated him any differently. But I know there were some girls that were in school that were very, very mousy. And I don't know that. A couple of black girls. I think they were friends with each other, and that was pretty much it. They did play intramural, the girls did. Okay.
Can I interject? I said I went to first and second grade to Iowa. And then I went 3rd, 4th, and 5th to Imbler because they had the first buses. And one of the big things that was thrown in my folks' face when my folks were carrying it to court to consolidate into the LeGrand School District rather than be taken into Imbler School District was, why do you want to go to LeGrand? You get those niggers up there. And when I started the 6th grade at Greenwood, which basically the blacks were across the track, and they're like I say, they're just
Went to Greenwood School.
They went to Greenwood, no other school, but basically because they lived in that area. Any black kid I ever saw wasn't half the problem that half of the kids were at Imbler. At Imbler, I'll get back to the blacks just a second. Well, they used to fail kids.
Repeated grade.
Yes.
Yes.
That doesn't happen now. But I can remember, I swear some of those kids in the 4th and 3rd, 4th, 5th grades were 15, 16 years old. And that day, a mowing machine had the guards in the front of the mowers, looked like daggers, kind of short daggers. And the boy, they're all farm boys, and the boys wear these daggers under their belt, and they, you know, and another kid and I, he's dead now, we were the used, he'd gone to Mount Glen, I think, and I'd gone down here to Iowa, and I was so sheltered, just one of the little first grade girl in me. When we went to Imbler, we were so frightened with some of those boys at Imbler, not just boys, girls, some of those kids at Imbler, that we would take our sack lunch, he and I, and we would crawl under the front of Wade Hall, which is the old gymnasium over there, and we would eat our lunch. We had a little hiding place under there. We'd be down there with the brown recluse spiders and everything. And, you know, when I look back at that, because I went there 3 years, 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade, those kids were tough, and they were mean. They were mean. There were some nice kids in Imbler, but honest to gosh. And I was panic-stricken to be sent to Greenwood, where all those quote-unquote niggers are. They were a piece of cake.
We didn't have enough black people.
No, we didn't have.
In LeGrand at that time to have a high crime rate. I mean, we didn't have a high crime rate of any kind. No. You could walk all over LeGrand and people left their doors unlocked. And
were the Chinese mostly gone by the time you got into LeGrand?
They were totally gone.
Yes.
But I remember, I just want to make this one little comment about Bernice's dad. He was so bigoted that, and like I say, I don't think he and I ever agreed on anything, but I took him to one college game, only one. Eastern Oregon was playing Portland State, and Portland State had a black center. Bernice's dad was short and stocky and loud. And it was the old gym that was right next to Ackerman. You know, we got down there and got sat down at that game. And this black kid obviously was a star, pretty good player. And Bernice's dad jumped up and he says, "Block the goddamn jig." You know, I made it through that game with him. And we weren't married.
We weren't married.
Were we married? That'd be my senior year, our senior year then. And I said, never again will I take him to a ball game. Anyway, that's enough of that.
Do you think are you telling me about him because he was unusual in his attitudes in this valley?
Well, I'm sure they, many harbored.
Yeah. He was just more vocal about it.
He was vocal. Volatile, very volatile. Mm-hmm.
You knew where he stood.
Oh, you sure did. And yet he loved doing, when he became an armchair retiree, he loved pro football and pro basketball, mm-hmm. which has their token white on the team.
He must have had to change his attitude a little bit.
He mellowed a little bit.
He mellowed a little.
With age.
Yes, yes. Do you have any reflections on the role of the railroad in Union County, or railroads? You must have had an awareness of its presence, yes, and importance throughout your lives.
Well, see, my stepfather worked for the railroad, mm-hmm. or the railroad, and I know the railroad was what, you know, caused the area to grow, and at the time that Dad worked on the railroad, I think it probably employed more people than anybody.
Yes. Yes.
Up until just the last few years he worked there.
Was it always in the background for you, though, or did it play any prominent role in your life?
Well, of course, that's how we lived.
Yeah. But you could... You could live without wages from the railroad without paying much attention.
I love riding on a train. Always did. When we lived in Huntington, my mother and grandmother and my brother and I would ride from Huntington to La Grande to visit relatives on the train. And then after mother married Dad, we had a pass. And I loved the old steam engine. I remember during the war being on the platform saying goodbye to people, you know, and those steam engines would come roaring into town, and I just remember my heart would just pound. I just thought, and I still think they were just beautiful.
They were noisy and dirty and smelly.
Yes.
What was beautiful about them?
Oh, the black, shiny black, and they were exciting. They're sort of like watching a jet airplane take off. They were exciting because probably the noise. And
there were some respects in which they almost seemed like living things.
Mm-hmm.
They pulsed and they made sounds.
La Grande in that day, of course, had the roundhouse. And when Bernice's stepdad started railroading, they literally walked the cars in the tops of the trains.
He was a brake. He started out being a brakeman, mm-hmm. and then he ended up being a conductor. But the brakeman actually walked the top of the car setting brakes.
Dangerous.
In ice and everything. And
imagine setting brakes at Meacham on cold winter nights.
He suffered a lot as he, in older age, from arthritis from jumping off and on the trains. But no, I always loved riding. Loved drinking water on the trains and going to the bathroom because you had to step between the cars.
Oh, yes. It was an adventure. Gary, what was your awareness of trains?
I had little, none, basically.
You can't avoid them, though, when you're here. You've got to hear them and you've got to see them. You've got to give some thought to them, don't you?
Quite frankly, I never rode a train until I was going with Bernice, in fact, that's the only train ride I took was from La Grande to Haines.
They blocked the crossings. That's his awareness of them.
Yeah, my total awareness. I will say one thing. Probably isn't something you want to put anywhere, but Bernice's dad, and I don't know if this was, I think most railroaders, pretty much work-wise, occupation-wise, did not lay off for anything. Christmas, Easter, birthday, you name it. And of course, they're 24 hours a day on call here. They're on call all the time.
Didn't participate in any
did
school
not
activities.
Participate in diddly squat. And in 1976, Our older daughter, Vicki, was graduating from high school. Floyd had just, I don't know, the 64, 65. And in fact, I used this when I talked a little about him when he died last May, at the funeral service. Vicki was chosen to give the baccalaureate address from her class. In fact, she was the classmate voted most likely to succeed. And Floyd had never heard either the girls sing or any of their speaking of any kind, any activity. They weren't athletic. Neither of the girls were athletic, involved in sports. And I remember about the week before, we said, Bernice said, or I said, Dad, your granddaughter's giving the baccalaureate talk. Couldn't you lay off to hear Vicki? Because it'll never happen again. Said he was a man of few words. He sat there for a couple of minutes and he says, no, I won't lay off. He sat there for a couple more minutes. He says, I'll retire. And he did. And he said he never went back to the yard office again. He never darkened the door. He hated the Union Pacific. Oh, he bellered and moaned and bitched about the Union Pacific and everything. Uncle Pete, that's what they called him, Uncle Pete, UP. And railroaders, salary-wise, were about as well paid as him. They sure made a bunch more than teachers or professors or farmers.